In association with For Whom the Cowbell Tolls.com, Mississippi State's SB Nation site, this is For Whom the Podcast Tolls. And now, Daniel Black and Ethan Lee.
How's it going, guys? Welcome to For Whom the Podcast Tolls. This is not the usual intro. Daniel is actually under the weather, and that's not just an excuse to get out of the show after what was probably the worst Egg Bowl that I've been to. I'm not sure if it was the worst he's been to. He told me he left the game early at like before halftime. So yeah, that was not fun. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. You get to listen to just me today. We don't have anybody filling in. So that's exciting and depressing. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk a little bit about the SEC slate and rivalry week because it was interesting. There were a few good games to watch and a few that were just some stupid football games, hashtag stupid football. We'll go over a little bit about basketball. The basketball team got another win, and then we have a couple of questions from one of our most loyal listeners and the guy that sends in the most questions, Mr. Vanderlip. But first, let's talk a little bit about the Egg Bowl, which just kind of felt like getting punched in the throat. The game sucked. The game just was a horrible suck fest. You look at the final score and it was relatively close. The second half we outscored them something like 24 to 10. You know, the second half was pretty great. Just not enough and didn't come soon enough. But overall it was, if you were to take away, you know, ifs and buts and candy or nuts and we all have a Merry Christmas, as Daniel likes to quote Brian Haydad, who is quoting someone else. If you were to take away the two turnovers that led to scoring plays, then the game goes the other way. That takes off 14 points, and we win 27-24. You know, those were the differences. And we talked about that coming in, you know, that whichever quarterback makes fewer mistakes, that team's going to win. Jackie Sherrill said it. I said it. I think Daniel said it as well. And just, you know, Dak made mistakes. And he hasn't made mistakes all year, and so we had no reason to believe he would. And it just, the ball didn't bounce our way in this game. This was, yeah. When you look at the stupid freaking fumble of Chad Kelly, where the ball bounces right back into his hands and not into, I think it was Jamal Peters. That's kind of when you know that it's just not your day. And that's how it was for State. That's how it was for, you know, it happened to Auburn too over in the Iron Bowl. They made that game close. That was that way for South Carolina. It was that way for Kentucky. It happens. I know nobody wants to hear it, but that's just how it is, and it sucks. So congrats, Ole Miss. You won the Egg Bowl, and you won my undying hatred. You are at the top of my list now. Okay, apparently Daniel has a two-game lead over me in our Pick'em Challenge. I'm done with the Egg Bowl. I'm moving on from it. If you can tell, as like I am shifting gears here. Let's look at the SEC slate. What happened around the conference? On Friday, while I was stuck in an airport, Arkansas beat the crap out of Missouri, and Gary Pinkel leaves, unfortunately, on a loss. He doesn't get to coach a bowl game unless something weird happens. Arkansas won 28-3 in a game that was never close. Alex Collins had a pretty huge game. Pulling up the stats there. Yeah, Alex Collins had a great game to the tune of 30 carries for 130 yards and 3 touchdowns. Brandon Allen had a not-this-year Brandon Allen type of game. 11 of 17 for 102 yards. That's not what we've seen. That's not what we've seen out of him lately. That is what it is there, I guess. You look over to Clemson, South Carolina. Clemson almost Clemsoned. This was almost the textbook definition of Clemsoning, even though they've beaten 20-something teams, unranked teams in a row. Doesn't matter. They almost got Clemsoned. South Carolina put up a pretty good fight, I thought, from what I saw. They were in this game for most of the first half. It got away from them a little bit in the second quarter. And they came right back in the third and fourth quarter, outscoring them by... They outscored them 29-23, so not that much. But they're right in this game, which was just impressive. You know, when you contend with the number one team in the nation and your team is 3-9 just coming off a loss to the Citadel, and you can go score for score, punch for punch with Clemson, who has one of the better offenses in the nation, one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. You know, hats off to South Carolina for almost ending their season on a positive note. But at the same time, they didn't. They just couldn't do it. So I guess that's that there. You look at Georgia Tech, the clean, old-fashioned hate, a win that got Mark Richt fired. Yeah. Explain that one to me sometime, listeners, if you're listening at this point, because I'm talking by myself. It's kind of depressing. but Georgia Tech, blah, blah, blah. Georgia beat Georgia Tech 13-7. And when you win a rivalry game and still get fired, there's something wrong with your athletic director. There's something wrong with your school. When your team has a chance to get 10 wins and you're fired, that whole situation is just wrong. There's no way about it. I tweeted about it earlier today, and you know, Georgia doesn't deserve success ever again. Mark Richt was their best head coach ever, and well, arguably their best head coach. I don't know their winning. You know, they had a good program. I don't know all of their head coaches. I just know that he is up there in terms of winning percentage. I know he's got more 10-win seasons than any of their other head coaches. And yeah, it just saddens me to see head coaches like Les Miles than Mark Richt get fired for having good years. It just doesn't make sense to me. A coach that should be fired is I think he's the youngest Stoops brother. I'm not certain. Kentucky lost to Louisville 24-38 in a game where Kentucky had a halftime lead of 24-7. Got outscored 31-0 in the second half. So yeah, there's no excuse for that. Kentucky had a repeat of what happened last year. You know, started off pretty hot and then fell apart. They're 5-7. They're not going bowling again. And they lost their quarterback, Patrick Toles, I don't know. He's gone. He's transferring. You know, if he were to come here, I wouldn't complain because he's a pretty talented dude. He's got a good arm, and he'd do well under Mullen, if assuming Mullen stays. I'll talk more about that later. I'm kind of whipping through this podcast pretty quickly. It's a little depressing. I miss you, Daniel. I know you're listening out there because you're recording it. But yeah, no, Kentucky just all of that recruiting success, all of that momentum they had, it's done. It's gone. There's nothing good happening at Kentucky right now except for their basketball team, maybe their baseball team. It's time for Kentucky to get a new head coach. And then moving over to another school that needs a new head coach, going to the Plains of Auburn, which there are not plains. I think there's hills, if anything. Yeah, Auburn is 6-6 on the year, a year that they're picked to be the SEC champs. I think they're 6-6. Let me double check. Yeah, 6-6, 2-6 in the SEC. They're last in the West. It's a miracle that they're going bowling. They're probably going to get blown out by some nobody team anyway. But they actually held in tight for this game. It was 6-12 at half. Auburn did everything they could to fight to get back in it. It was 19-13 at the end of the fourth. But when you bring in Gus Malzahn to be the offensive wizard, the offensive wonder kid, the offensive whatever you want to call him, his offense is offensive. It's bad. There is nothing good about this offense right now. Jeremy Johnson, I've said it before, he didn't deserve the Heisman hype. And whether that was put on him by fans, coaches, media, whoever, I feel bad for him because he's the one that's going to have to deal with that pressure. And that's not his fault. But Auburn was in a position to win this game. You know, they were in a position to go score for score with Alabama, and they just couldn't. They couldn't keep Alabama down through a field goal fest. So that's how the Iron Bowl went. And they will play Florida and Atlanta. So Vanderbilt, Tennessee. I don't know why I believed in Derek Mason. I don't know why I thought their defense would do any good. I just, because it did nothing. The only thing it did was let Tennessee rack up 53 points. When Vanderbilt's only bright spot is a running back and they're supposed to be good defense, and the defense shows up for nothing, you're not going to win many games. And Ralph Webb, their running back here, 21 attempts for 149 yards. He deserves to be on a better team. He should transfer down here to Starkville. He should come play for Mississippi State. Because he doesn't... What he did in this game was the only bright spot for the Vanderbilt Commodores. There is no other highlight for them. There is no bright spot. There is no good there. And we move over to the Rotten Egg Bowl. And yeah, we've... Nobody wants to relive that, except for that school up north. I will say this real quick, just as an aside. What Dan Mullen has done the past 2 years is incredible, and it's wonderful. And it's unfortunate we lost the Egg Bowl, but Dak Prescott's career should not be defined by that. Peyton Manning never beat Florida. Technically, Johnny Manziel never beat Texas. So these great quarterbacks, that rivalry games mean a lot, and people are going to hang that over their heads. Ole Miss fans have taken to Twitter to bash Dak Prescott. But what he's done is better than what Eli ever did. It's right up there with what Archie did. So for any Ole Miss fans that listen, I don't know if there are any that actually do. Just know that Dak is better than the guy you've got with an AK. He's better than Chad Kelly. He may not have been better Saturday night, but he's a better quarterback. And I hope that Chad Kelly goes pro. I hope to never have to see that man play Mississippi State again. He played a perfect game. Moving over to Florida State, Florida. Talking about the Noles and FSU Twitter and Jameis Winston, even though he's not there, Jimbo Fisher and blah, 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 blah. 27-2 was the final score. I didn't watch this game. I was kind of depressed after the Egg Bowl. 27-2 is not typically a good score. When Florida's only points come from what I'm assuming was a safety, I didn't watch it. I might get a note from the editor over there in a minute if he knows. But it's not a good score. You're not going to win many games scoring 2 points. Just ask Sylvester Kroom. maybe get Treon Harris on some PEDs, and that might be your only hope against Alabama, because the tide's gonna destroy Florida. We move down to that down to the other state with swamps, over to Cajun country. LSU destroyed A&M. Destroyed. I say destroyed. It was a really close game from everything I heard and looked at the box score and such. 19-7. Leonard Fournette had a pretty good game, if I recall correctly. 32 carries for 159 yards and a touchdown. He's back to doing Fournette stuff. They had a fantastic punt return. If you haven't seen that, or kickoff return, or whatever it was, if you haven't seen that highlight, that special teams highlight, it was pretty special. I recommend looking it up. Kyle Allen for A&M had a not so great game, but Brandon Harris had an even worse game. So quarterback play for the SEC, outside of Chad Kelly, outside of Dak Prescott, just wasn't very good this weekend. And I think that pretty much wraps it up, outside of saying that, Les Miles pretty much gave a big old middle finger to the LSU Board of Trustees and all the boosters, because he's pretty much, he won what is allegedly a rivalry game. I don't know if it is or not. And he kept his job. So Mark Richt should be pretty upset about that, in my opinion. Yeah, I'm upset about Mark Richt still, if you couldn't tell. But that does it for SEC play. I'm not even going to go into the 2-pick lead that he still has, apparently. Which I don't know exactly how it worked out, but I picked Houston and that went my way. So I know I got a game there. I just don't remember. I think I may have picked Kentucky, which I was dumb for doing. But anyway, our basketball team won, and I'm pulling up the stats there real quick. As you can tell, I have not done a lot of prep work. I've been stressed because of finals. So I'm just kind of talking and blabbing. I picked Vanderbilt as well, according to Daniel and his editor notes. His producer notes? I don't know if he's an editor or producer, but it is what it is. Stats. Basketball. Come on. Come on. Load. The basketball team. The basketball team moves to 3-3 overall. They get an out-of-conference win against UT Martin. And all of the games are out of conference. I don't know. Whatever. 76-51. Apparently 7,000 people showed up for the game. 7,150. That's pretty good. Any game that you win by 25 points is a good game. Why did the... And it's not working great. Come on, computer. Help me here. Okay. Box score. Yeah, this was the only bright spot on Egg Bowl Day. The Rotten Egg Bowl, as I'm going to call it forever. Gavin Ware had a phenomenal game. Just phenomenal. He goes off 9-12 from the field, 4-5 at the free throw line, has 10 rebounds, 22 total points, 2 assists, 3 blocks, a steal, and 30 minutes of work. He is far and away the best player for Mississippi State right now. Far and away. He's better than Malik Newman, Malik Newman did not play well. 2-10 from the field, 1-4 from behind the arc, the three-point line. Yeah, 3 rebounds, but he just did not play well at all. 5 total points. IJ Reddy had 10 points. Craig Sword had, let's see, Craig Sword had 8 points. So, we are getting great play from guys like Gavin Ware. We're getting great play from Quindary Weatherspoon, who goes 6-6 from the field, 2-2 from behind the line. Yeah, 3 total rebounds, gets 16 points in 18 minutes. 18 minutes and 16 points. That's pretty good. So if you're wondering, is Malik Newman the best player on the team now? I wouldn't say he's the fifth best player. So I think Quindary Weatherspoon is doing great from the bench. I think guys like Gavin Ware and Travis Daniels, IJ Reddy, are having pretty great seasons. Craig Swords' start to the season is not so great. That's something I'm a little curious about. Hoping he can get it together. Because if he gets it together, Fred Thomas can hit his shots consistently. This team's going to be pretty good. It's still looking like potentially the third or fourth best team in the SEC, which would be pretty good, falling behind Kentucky, A&M, LSU right now. Daniel's probably going to give me crap because I've said they could be better than that, and I think they can. I think realistically they can contend with guys like with teams like LSU and A&M. I think we might beat Kentucky depending on which team shows up, if Malik Newman can play to his potential, because he's going to be an NBA player more likely than not. He will be an NBA player. He just has that kind of talent. So yeah, Gavin Ware so far the best player on the team, averaging over 20 points a game. And that's, you know, that's really good. He's almost averaging a double-double on the season, you know, for his per game totals. Let me check this real quick. Gavin Ware. Yeah, he's averaging 7.3 rebounds a game. So maybe not almost a double-double, but he's not far off. And when you're averaging 20 points a game and almost 10, you know, well, almost, blah, 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 I'm dumb, over 7 rebounds a game, you're having a pretty good season. And I would expect that if he could do that all season against teams like Kentucky, against teams like LSU, does it in the NIT or maybe for a bubble team, if he can do that against good competition, then there's no doubt about it. He'll find his way into the draft somewhere. He'll find a team. Because that's just good production. That's too good to ignore. And that's pretty much it about Hail State hoops right now. Oh, well, the women's basketball team, also really good. Scored over 100 again and dominated. They're probably better than the men's team still. So hats off to them. I'm going to pull up their stats real quick just because they're worth talking about more so than the Egg Bowl, because that was heartbreaking. So now we wait for my computer to load, and I wish Daniel was here to distract you and provide input. You only get my opinions now. Maybe that's actually a good thing. You should only get my opinions forever. Oh, I said they scored over 100. They only scored 92. Only. Okay. 92 points for the second straight game in a row. They beat Savannah State 92-25, which kind of reminds me of a Florida State Savannah State football game a while back, or the Oklahoma State Savannah State football game a while back. This game was never close. Just hats off to the ladies. You know, round of applause for y'all, because y'all are going to be a Final Four team for sure if y'all play like this, because you're averaging over 100 points a game on the season. And that's really, really good, especially for women's basketball. That's phenomenal. Just because you don't see that kind of offense in women's basketball. It's kind of rare. And so, you know, the women's basketball team might be the best athletic program on campus right now, which we all saw that coming. So that's that. And we have a question from Mr. Vanderlip at the Large Dog trademark on Twitter. I think it's trademarked. Daniel always says it is. And he sent in an email that is rather, it's a pretty interesting email. It, you know, reads as the following. I present the following questions in email form. As before, a knowledgeable answer can be made, some groundwork must be laid. Caution, math to follow. If we look at the games played from 1990 until 2015, the teams are even at 13-13 each. With that being said, was this year's game simply a regression to the mean? It certainly looked that way. I would say that it you know, we bounce down to the average, but the average is actually in Ole Miss's favor. They've won 60-something. We've won 40-something. You know, that is what it is. So I hope we don't regress to the mean. I hope that we don't regress to average there. You know, we bounced it back down to even. You know, if Ole Miss has won 3 of the last 4, there was a stretch from 2009 to 2011 where we won 3 of 3. So, you know, these streaks will happen. These sort of, you know, it's not going to bounce right back and forth each and every year. But, you know, it is possible that if Ole Miss were to win again next year, that's depressing. Let's not talk about that. We're going to beat Ole Miss next year. In some sport, something. Tiddlywinks, probably. He also goes on to ask, as a coin flipping will balance out, if you will, this is continuation off of regression to the mean. Do we need to look at advanced statistics, which have shown that the college team with the highest composite recruiting rank, okay, I see where he's going here, will win 80% of the games played regardless of home or away. Okay. With that being said, do we need to examine the recruit? This is not off the last question, by the way. This is the groundwork for a new question. So, with that being said, do we need to examine the recruiting practice and perhaps get a quote-unquote, or quote, Bagman, unquote, Bagman, money, who's a better evaluator of talent? We have tried to buy players before. Look at Will Redmond's start. Look at Cam Newton's start. I am wholeheartedly against the bag man sort of money route to recruiting. I am wholeheartedly against that. Yeah, you know, I'm fully in favor of getting solid stipends and getting full scholarships and paying the players through the university. I'm not for it. I'm not for Bagman. I don't know. Bagmany? Plural of Bagman. Bagman. I don't know what I'm saying. You are just listening to me at this point, and I'm rambling. But no, I am against the Bagman, who's a better evaluator of talent. Look, the way I see Dan Mullen's talent in recruiting and the guys he goes after is he gets the guys he wants. He gets the guys he knows he can get. He gets the guys that he knows will develop and turn into very good players. This year, one thing that a lot of the national media said is we would step back in terms of talent, and we did a little bit. Because we have a young team, we played the second most freshmen in the conference, right behind Georgia, which screw you, Georgia, for firing Mark Richt, by the way. So when you look at we're playing a lot of freshmen, and we dismissed it saying, our freshmen are talented. And they are. They are great players. But it just takes time to develop. So I would always, whenever it comes to recruiting rankings, whenever it comes to recruiting in the gray areas, as an article that some blog somewhere put out, I'm never for that. And to say that Dan Mullen can't recruit is a lie. I think he does recruit. I think he goes after the guys he wants and the guys he knows he can get. He knows he's not going to out-recruit guys like Nick Saban. And he knows he can get the guys that are in-state that will develop into solid players. Look at Jonathan Banks. He's the perfect example. The guy was like a 2-star, if I remember correctly. Maybe not even ranked. Comes to state. Turns into one of the SEC's best cornerbacks while he was there. He's in the NFL now, making a lot of money in Tampa Bay. He's the perfect example of this. Dak Prescott's another great example, was recruited to be a tight end at LSU, is one of the best quarterbacks in SEC and college football history. you know, I don't think they're anomalies. I think we have a great abundance of these sort of guys that are developmental. And I know everybody hates that sort of term. I know everybody hates that recruiting because it's not flashy. But it is what it is. And just take it for what it is. Dan Mullen's good at it. You look over at Kansas State, and Bill Snyder's made a lot of money and has had a lot of success building a program there that he knows he's not going to out-recruit Texas. He's not going to out-recruit OU. But he can develop guys and turn them into solid football players and put them in the NFL. So when it comes to this whole, let's recruit better, let's pay the players illegally, let's do this, let's do that, let's not. Let's just slow down and look at the fact that it takes time. This was a rebuilding year, whether we wanted to admit it or not. Next year, all those young players that are really talented and the ones that are coming in, assuming Dan Mullen stays amid all that controversy, you know, we bring in a solid recruiting class to help. And I think next year's team will be very good. It's going to be a little bit more experienced, one of the more experienced teams in the nation, just because of how many guys have been in the system for a while. You'll have Richie Brown as a senior. It's possible that, no, well, Fred Ross is probably gone too. But you're going to have deep receiving core. You're going to have Gus Wally back. You're going to have a lot of these guys that brought in, developed, and now are playing at a very high level. So next year's team will be pretty good. And the last question. Ethan, do you feel Ole Miss will hold the number one spot on your list for many years to come? I referenced this earlier, that Ole Miss was at the top of my most hated list. New development. A&M used to be at the top of my list just because I grew up in Texas, well, A&M and UT. I just, a lot of long story there. It's a very long story. And behind those two, it was LSU actually tied with Ole Miss, which I would put Ole Miss technically, since Ole Miss was tied with LSU for third, I'd, you know, just automatically demote Ole Miss to fourth because screw Ole Miss. They can go to hell. But, you know, after this past game, just feeling like I was punched in the throat, they leapfrogged everybody and moved first. And I think more than likely, assuming I'm not paid by Ole Miss to go play football there, they will be at the number one spot on my list for many years to come. Until, you know, if I become a sports writer or whatever, and I'm paid to for Ole Miss football, then I'll have to repress those feelings and put those aside so that way I can be professional. Assuming that ever happens, which maybe not. More than likely, yes, Mr. Vanderlip, Ole Miss will be at the top of my list for many years to come. So that'll pretty much do it for this episode. It's kind of a boring episode. It was only half a show. So I guess this would be where I do final thoughts. And my final thoughts are this. Don't run off Dan Mullen. We just saw Mark Richt get run off. We almost saw Les Miles get run off. And they're victims of their success. They're victims of the expectations they built. Dan Mullen is in that sort of position right now. I'm not saying he's had the success they have had, because he just hasn't. But what he has done here at Mississippi State is unparalleled. It is phenomenal. You know, you look at guys like Alan McKean, and once he left, once he was fired for a mediocre season, we weren't relevant again until maybe the 70s, the late, you know. And then you jump over to the 90s, we had Jackie Sherrill, and we had a good run there. And then we had the Croom years, which, y'all remember the Croom years. I know you do. I know I have listeners that lived through that and were at those games. Nobody wants that again. College football is cyclical. It goes through cycles. And if we're not careful, if we get rid of the guy that has built us up so much, it could all come crashing down. You know, that being said, if Dan Mullen were to leave, I guess like the I've texted Daniel and I've tweeted about this. The one guy I would want, seriously want, for the job would be Mike Leach, because he can do the same sort of things that Dan Mullen has done. He made Texas Tech into an offensive force that beat the University of Texas. That never happened. That would be like us beating Bama. Nick Saban's Bama, because he beat Mac Brown. So, you know, they're both offensive gurus. They're both quirky and weird personalities. Mike Leach is a character. But we're more than likely not going to be able to get Mike Leach. So just don't run off Dan Mullen. He's a great coach. You can criticize the decisions he's made. You can criticize the recruiting even. I don't really care about that. Just don't run him out the door. Because if he leaves, it'll be hard to replace him easily. It'll be hard to transition from him. And those are my final thoughts. So for Daniel Black, who is recording the episode and not feeling well, hopefully he feels better soon. I am Ethan Lee. Thank you for listening to For Whom the Podcast Tolls, the official podcast of For Whom the Cowbell Tolls. I don't really have that intro that Daniel has, or the outro. He has it written up somewhere. It's fancy. But thanks for listening, everybody, and goodbye.